is our lot. I no more resent him, his eternal youth, than he resents me, my looks." He gave Alares a grin. "I speak not of resentment," said Gash softly. "I speak of something a man, any man, may wish for. The chance to be young again, to be forever in the prime of his life, to attain knowledge and wisdom but never have his body fail, to have the vitality and strength that an aging body can never summon. If I offered you this gift, freely and without condition, would you take it?" Dryden did not pause. "I would," he said. Gash nodded, then turned to Alares. "I know your heart, Alares. Advise him as a friend, and see if he trusts you as a friend." Alares groaned inwardly. Long had Dryden yearned for just this thing, and many times they had talked of what it meant. It was perhaps the one thing they had never truly agreed on. "Dryden, my friend," Alares said earnestly, "we have often talked of my long youth. You know the pain it has wrought me. I see those I love wither and die. You would see the same for your wife, Siana, your children, your grandchildren. There are some pains and failures I still remember from 1,000 years ago, clear as if they were yesterday. I beg of you, though I know your heart and how tempting it must be, do not accept this gift." Dryden heard the words of his friend, yet as before they made little sense to him. "But Alares, think of it. We could ride as when I was young. We could adventure together once again. The deaths of those I love would hurt, yet we would still have the chance to spend the entire span of their lives together. That alone is worth the price." Alares saw which way his friend was deciding and thought to warn him. He made to cry out, but Gash raised his hand, and all words fled from Alares' lips. Dryden turned to Gash, his face glowing with excitement. "I accept your offer," he said. At those words he fell dead to the floor.
"The second task is failed," intoned Gash. "The greatest of your friends refused your advice and so was unworthy of your friendship."
Alares dropped to his knees and wept for his dead friend. Then he left Kist, without saying another word, the burden on his heart almost too heavy to bear. For generations Alares mourned the death of his friend. The final task weighed on him, and yet he knew that Gash would know if he simply stopped trying to fulfill it. So he searched, but was never satisfied. 1,000 beautiful, intelligent, interesting, honorable women passed through his court each year, but he found none of them more special than the others. The price of immortality on love was too high, the pain too great. Only for a great love would he take such a risk. Alares had never wed for exactly this reason. 500 years passed, and Alares met Teravia, the Shard Princess. Few women Alares had ever seen could match her beauty, and yet it was her wit that drew him to her, and her warmth and kindness that slowly turned his heart. She was wise with the purity of innocence, witty but never mean-spirited, charming but never ingratiating. And beyond all that, above all, she loved Alares. Not just as a powerful king, an honorable warrior, an intelligent strategist. She loved him as a man, with all his faults and failings. And he loved her in return. Their wedding was celebrated throughout all the Shining Lands. Their marriage was the stuff of legend. Teravia was beloved by the people of the Shining Lands. As queen, she was as wise as her husband, and a time of unprecedented peace lay across the realm. Alares had never been happier than when he was with Teravia. It was a great love, a true love, And yet Alares did not tell Taravia about the third task. He did not ask her to accompany him to Kist to see Gash. Diadin's death and Jadlus's before him still weighed on his mind, and the thought of losing Taravia was more than he could bear. And so he waited, telling himself each year that he would try the next. 60 years passed, and Taravia became gravely ill. The country ground to a halt as word spread of the queen's sickness, with every man, woman, and child hoping against hope that she would be miraculously healed. Her time drawing to a close, Taravia met with her friends, then her children, to bid them farewell. Finally, all that was left was Alares, who knelt by her bed holding her hand. Even aged, even on her deathbed, she was beautiful. Taravia smiled when she saw him.
"Husband," she whispered, "why do you look so sad?"
And so he told her about Gash and the three tasks, about Diadin and his failure. As Alares spoke, Taravia's smile turned to a look of pain and sorrow.
"Why did you not take me to see Gash all these years?" she asked. "Do you not think our love is true?"
"Our love is more than true. It is a great love," said Alares, tears in his eyes.
"But I was afraid. Afraid of losing you before your time, as I lost my friend Diadin."
He closed his eyes.
"This burden I could not have borne."
Taravia looked on her husband sadly, squeezing his hand.
"You should have trusted me," she whispered. "I would not have failed you, my love."
Her grip loosened, and her gaze faded. With those words, Taravia, last queen of the Shining Lands, passed on. Alares looked on her and wept bitter tears, for he knew in his selfishness he had not only lost his chance to prove Gash wrong, but left Taravia believing she had not had his trust. When his eyes cleared, he was before Gash in Kist once again. How he came to be there he did not know.
"You have broken our agreement, Alares. You spoke of our accord to another."
Alares nodded.
"I did."
Gash leaned back.
"Yet she is dead. I will overlook your mistake, should you wish it."
Alares shook his head.
"I finally found a woman worthy of my love," he said softly, "only to discover I was not worthy of hers."
He straightened.
"I concede to you, mighty Gash. You spoke the truth. The tasks you set me were impossible. I will serve you as you see fit. The Shining Lands are yours."
He spoke truly, for his spirit and his heart were broken. Gash rose from his throne, eyes burning.
"It is done," he proclaimed joyfully.
He fitted Alares in the black armor of Telesthesia and charged him to lead his army against the Shining Lands. Alares did as he was commanded, slaughtering those he had once sworn to protect. The Shining Lands, without a king and facing a force unlike any they had ever seen, fell swiftly into chaos and destruction. So ends the story of the impossible tasks of Alares Shar. Davian stared at the book thoughtfully for several minutes. It had made no mention of Arkhine Devade. If it had not been for the picture at the beginning, he would not have thought this story had anything to do with Devade at all. Was Alares Shar actually Arkhine Devade? Or was Gash? Or had he made a mistake by picturing the symbol when using the advisor, leading himself to a book that held no useful information at all? He gritted his teeth in frustration. He read the story again, but gleaned no more from it than the first time. Finally, reluctantly, he snapped the book shut, drew some essence from the lamp, and got to his feet. He'd probably have time to examine it again and read the remainder of the stories in the book once he reached Ilin Ilan. For now, though, he needed to keep moving. Chapter 46. Asha gaped a little as she entered the ballroom. She'd never been in this part of the palace before. A vaulted ceiling held thousands of tiny crystal lanterns that reflected softly off the polished black marble floor, highlighting the dazzling designs of inlaid white marble and gold. Tables lined the enormous room, each filled with gleaming silver platters and goblets. Arched stained glass windows let in the last of dusk's light. These depicted various scenes, battles, moments from legend, in stunning color and detail. "Impressive, isn't it?" murmured Michael from next to her. Asha nodded. "It is, but they still shouldn't be going ahead with this. Not now," she said quietly as they were ushered to their seats. She rubbed her forehead, trying not to sound bitter. "I just don't understand why everyone is trying to hide from what's happening." Michael was silent for a few seconds, then glanced at her sideways. "You're not just talking about tonight, are you?"
"No."
They'd had a meeting at Tul Athian earlier that day, in which Elder Ilinar had informed them that if the tenants were not changed, they would not be joining in the defense of the city. "The gifted could make a real difference healing the wounded in a battle. I understand that they're angry, that they feel like they're being asked to go out and fight without any way to defend themselves. But to hide in Tul Athian while the city gets attacked is just..." She shook her head in frustration. Michael gave her a reassuring smile. "I actually agree, but it's not going to come to that. General Jashtar and his forces will have dealt with the blind soon enough. And if for some reason they do not, I'm sure the king will reconsider." He shrugged. "As for tonight, the North Warden is perfectly within his rights to celebrate the return of his only son." Michael glanced around, then lowered his voice. "Besides, I suspect the king will use it as an excuse to show himself in public, quieten all these rumors that have been swirling around him." Asha sighed, but didn't argue further. She gazed around at the people already filling the room, everyone clad in finery that made her new red dress look almost shabby by comparison. She recognized many of them. Some she'd met in her role as representative, and others Michael had previously pointed out. There were plenty of minor houses, as always. Sabandon, Sidress, and Sakal were all near her table, laughing and drinking. The great houses, Tel Rath, Tel Shan, Tel An, and Tel Esh, were all well represented too, but their lords seemed less jovial. She took a deep breath, letting some of her frustration fade into the background as she focused on her surroundings. "The great houses," she said softly to Michael. "They don't usually speak together so publicly, do they?" Michael followed her gaze. "No," he said, frowning. "They don't usually speak together at all." Asha watched for a moment longer, then glanced over with interest at the king's table. Princess Caroline was already there, as were a couple of others she did not recognize. As she watched, Dras Lothlar, the gifted advisor from Shen, came and sat only two seats away from Caroline. The princess shot him an angry look, but Lothlar ignored it.
"We've done better than I expected being seated here," murmured Michael.
They had people seated either side of them, but the chatter of the crowd was loud enough that no one would be able to overhear. He shot a dark look at the king's table.
"Though I could say the same for Shen. Something odd is going on there, mark my words." "The princess wasn't too happy to see Representative Lothlar sitting there," said Asha. "I saw that. Yannis didn't look pleased either, though that's not really a surprise."
Michael made a discreet gesture to where the tall, severe-looking administrator was sitting. At that moment, a horn sounded, and the room quickly fell silent, all eyes turning to the king's table. Introductions were made by a herald, and everyone rose as King Andras himself entered. Though Asha didn't think the king looked as sick as some people had claimed, he did seem pallid, almost fragile, as he walked, as if he were a much older man than his 50 years. Behind him came the Duke, regal in his formal attire, even his fine blue cloak for once looking far more for show than practical. He was followed by Weir, or Torin, as she now had to think of him. Even after their afternoon together a few days ago, she almost didn't recognize her friend. He was as finely attired as his father and looked self-assured as he came to a stop at the seat of honor, to the right of the king.
"You and everyone else," whispered a voice in her ear.
She started, turning to see the young woman sitting next to her, giving her a conspiratorial grin.
"Sorry," said Asha.
The girl gestured towards the king's table.
"Our young prince, all grown up," she said. "Every unmarried girl in the room is having the same thought right now."
She glanced around.
"Some of the married ones, too, I'll wager."
Asha flushed.
"I wasn't..."
She trailed off. The young woman had already twisted away again, staring hungrily at Weir. Asha restrained the urge to snicker. The first course was served, and Asha ate absentmindedly, barely responding to attempts at conversation by Michael and the others around her. She knew she was being somewhat impolite. Michael even shot her a few irritated glares. But every time she caught a glimpse of Weir, her mind wandered. She wished again that she could tell her friend about Davian. When she and Weir had spent the afternoon swapping stories, that had been the hardest part. Watching his face as he'd hesitantly, despondently described their flight from Dylanus. The moment that Tayris had told him the connection had been broken. There had been such pain there that Asha had almost spoken up, despite Davian's warning not to. But she'd kept silent, and the moment had passed. The rest of that afternoon had been the happiest she could remember in months. Weir, for his part, had been thrilled to discover Asha was living in the palace, and suitably astonished by the reasons why. If Alosian hadn't returned after a while to confirm he was working with the augurs, Asha didn't think Weir would have believed it. She couldn't help but smile now as she watched her friend. As dinner progressed, small groups of people, usually in twos or threes, were brought up to be formally introduced to the prince. Everyone bowed, many brought gifts, all looked vaguely intimidated by him. Time passed, and soon there was an usher touching Michael on the shoulder. The Athian representative rose, gesturing for her to do the same.
"Try to be a little more attentive than you've been so far," Michael whispered to her as they made their way between the tables towards Weir,
a hint of irritation in his tone.
"We have this one chance to make an impression, and the prince is going to notice that you're a shadow. Regardless of whether he already knows, it's going to be a point of conversation. So be prepared to do some talking."
Asha didn't know whether to be embarrassed or to laugh. In the end, she did neither, instead inclining her head in acquiescence. Asha kept her eyes firmly on Weir, who was deep in conversation with the young woman sitting between him and Princess Caroline, the king's ward, from what Michael had said, and didn't notice who was approaching. When he looked up, his eyes flashed with amusement as introductions were made.
"Michael, Ashalia,"
Weir nodded politely.
"A pleasure to meet you both. You are the representatives for Athian?"
Michael bowed, and Asha remembered to curtsy just in time, trying not to smile as she did so.
"We are, Your Highness," said Michael. "It is a pleasure to meet you, too."
Weir inclined his head, then leaned back, studying them openly.
"So, a shadow as a representative," he said, looking at Asha with a raised eyebrow. "An unusual choice, one that we have not regretted, sire," Michael assured him. "Asha is a quick study. She'll one day make an excellent addition to the assembly. I could not have asked for more."
Weir nodded, looking thoughtful. He stared at Asha intently.
"High praise," he said, the faintest hint of amusement back in his eyes. "And I've heard good things from other sources, too. I'm impressed."
Asha kept her face smooth. "Thank you, Your Highness. That means so much to me," she said with as much sincerity as she could muster.
The corners of Weir's mouth crept upward, and he was about to say something more when an older man, one of the generals, Asha thought by his uniformed attire, hurried past, going straight to King Andras and whispering something in his ear. The king glowered at whatever the man had said, then shooed him away, gesturing to Elosion. The duke paled as the news the king had been given was relayed, then stood, heading straight for Weir. He frowned for a moment when he saw Asha sitting opposite Weir, but relaxed again once he realized that Michael was there too. He bent over Weir's shoulder.
"You're needed, son," he said, his voice calm. "Our army has been broken."
The North Warden glanced across at Michael and Asha.
"You two should come as well. I think Tolathian may need to have some say in what happens next."
"Of course," said Michael, looking sick. Asha's stomach churned too as she processed the news. Despite having known what was coming, she'd still been clinging to the hope that it would turn out differently. They trailed after Elosion and Weir, leaving the hubbub of the feast behind them as they moved into an adjoining room. The king was already seated, and he gestured for everyone else to follow suit. Princess Caroline was there, as was Layman Cardai and Dras Lothlar, the latter of whom looking especially displeased to see Michael and Asha. The group was soon completed by Yannis, who looked even more disgruntled when he realized that both Tol Athian and Tol Shen were represented.
"What are they doing here?" he asked irritably, gesturing at Michael and Asha.
"I invited them," said Elosion. "This discussion will doubtless revolve around the gifted. They have just as much right to be a part of that conversation as us, Yannis."
Yannis muttered something inaudible but subsided as the Duke looked at him steadily. Once the administrator was seated, a middle-aged man, a general named Paraith, if Asha remembered correctly, stood.
"Jastar's forces haven't just been broken. They have been decimated," announced Paraith.
There was a heaviness to his tone, a despondency that made Asha's heart sink. Everyone just stared at the general for a moment, with more than one face going pale at the news.
"How?" asked Elosion. "They were told to dig in, to hold them up, possibly to negotiate if that was an option, but to retreat if necessary."
Paraith shook his head.
"It wasn't in open battle. The blind stopped marching when they saw our men coming. They'd been dormant for a couple of days. Jastar thought they were intimidated, might even want to talk."
He sighed.
"To be honest, Your Grace, we're not sure exactly what happened. It seems that our men were overconfident and didn't set an adequate watch. The enemy snuck in under cover of darkness somehow while many of our people were sleeping. Killed most of the men in their tents before the alarm was even raised, then swept in and finished the rest off. There were only a few survivors."
There was a stunned silence. "How many is a few, General?" Weir finally asked.
400 or so," replied Paraith. "Maybe 5, depending on how many managed to scatter to the forests nearby."
Asha swallowed, and she could hear Michael's sharp intake of breath beside her. The Duke just grimaced.
"You're certain the others are all dead?"
"Yes."
Paraith stared at his clasped hands, unwilling to look anyone in the eye.
"And that report is days old now. Depending on how hard the blind have been pushing, they could be here in a couple of days. Maybe less."
Elosion leaned forward. He wore a calm expression, but his knuckles were white as he gripped the table.
"Do we at least have any new intelligence?"
Paraith nodded.
"We know that they move in squads of 10 men, 9 with those strange helmets and 1 who sits back from the fighting like a commander. They all seem to be well-trained, hard to fight individually, but especially cohesive as units."
The general sighed.
"Other than that, Your Grace, no. Only what we already knew."
"Which is that there's something unnatural about them,"
growled Giannis, shooting Drass and Michael an accusatory look as if it were somehow their fault. The North Warden took a deep breath, then laid a hand on his brother's shoulder.
"This is an enormous loss, Your Majesty," he said. "I know you're against it, but there is no other way. We need to change the tenets. Allow the gifted to fight."
Paraith inclined his head in agreement.
"I concur, Your Majesty." It was Drass. "I can have a contingent from Tol Shen ready to defend the city walls by dusk tomorrow."
Michael, reluctant though he looked to be agreeing with Drass, nodded too.
"You know my thoughts, Your Majesty," interjected Giannis. "Administration has an obligation to protect the people, and the tenets are what allow us to perform that function. Changing them is taking a short-term view."
He shot a hard look at the Duke, as if daring the other man to reprimand him. Elosian scowled, but said nothing. The king stared vacantly at the table for a few moments, then shook his head.
"No."
There was silence as everyone exchanged questioning looks. Then Elosian cleared his throat.
"Brother, surely you don't mean..."
The king slammed his fist down onto the table suddenly and violently, making everyone jump.
"I mean no!"
he roared. His face had turned bright red and spittle came out of his mouth when he spoke. Sweat clung to his brow in great beads now, and there was no doubt in Ash's mind that he was a very sick man.
"Don't you see, Elosian? Giannis is right! This is what they want! It's what they've always wanted!"
He sneered at Drass, then twisted to glare at Michael and Asha.
"You bleeders are probably behind all this. I should have you all hung for traitors! Every last one!"
He stood as if to carry out his threat immediately. Drass had gone deathly pale.
"Your Majesty, I..."
He trailed off helplessly, clearly not sure what to say.
"Kevron, please sit down."
Elosian looked more troubled than Asha had ever seen him.
"We can lay blame later, but right now we need a plan to defend Ilin Ilan. The gifted are our only..."
"We have our 6,000. We have the city guard,"
interrupted the king. He had calmed again, though was still a little wild-eyed.
"We have the 400 returning to us. We have citizens who will fight. The blind have no ships. They cannot come by river, so the only way into the city is through Fedris Idri. This is the most defensible city ever built. We will prevail without the gifted."
He gestured.
"I tell you this as a courtesy, not to seek your advice. It is my decision, and mine alone, to make."
Paraith opened his mouth to protest, but a quick glance from the Duke silenced him. The general gave the slightest of nods to the North Warden, unseen by the king. Elosian could obviously see that arguing the point now would only cause more trouble.
"And what of the gifted, Your Majesty?" asked Weir quietly.
"The gifted can fight like real men if they wish, with sword and shield, or heal the wounded if they are too afraid. But they will not use their powers for violence whilst I rule."
The king looked around, his glare defying anyone to gainsay him.
"You are dismissed."
They rose silently, stunned, and began filing out of the room. Asha glanced towards Weir, hoping to catch his eye, but he appeared to have been waylaid by the king and was not looking in her direction. Once outside, she found herself walking alongside Michael as the others went their separate ways.
"What did you make of all that?"
asked Michael, keeping his voice low. Asha made a face.
"I think those rumors about the king being ill were fairly accurate. He's not in control."
Michael sighed and gave a grim nod.
"I agree. And suddenly it seems I share your concern about Tol Athian's recent decision, too. I'm just not sure what anyone can do about it."
He glanced across at her.
"Are you going to leave?"
"Leave?" Asha looked at him in surprise.
"No,
Of course not.
Michael watched her for a long moment, then let out a breath, evidently satisfied.
Good. A lot of the nobility will, once they find out. First thing tomorrow morning, I suspect. Maybe even tonight.
He smiled, shaking his head.
I would understand if you decided to go, but just let me know if you do. Seems I'm becoming fond of you, Ashalia. I'd be worried if you suddenly disappeared again.
Asha smiled back.
You're staying?
She hadn't thought for a moment about leaving, but she suddenly realized how tempting it must be for a lot of people.
Yes, I'm going to go back to the feast now. Try to convince as many people as possible to stay and fight. Try and get as many people as we can behind the idea that now is the time for the tenets to be changed, too. I know how King Andrus looked, but maybe, if there's enough pressure...
He sighed.
It would help if you were to join me. Would look less like I was arguing for my own interests.
Asha nodded, was about to agree when she caught sight of Elosian down the hallway. She hesitated.
I'll come if I can, she promised. But there's something I must discuss with the Duke first.
Michael looked about to protest, then nodded reluctantly.
If you can, then, he agreed.
Asha gave him an apologetic glance, then hurried after Elosian, falling into stride alongside him just before he turned the corner.
Representative Chaedrus, the Duke said politely, nodding to her.
He glanced around, seeing that there was no one within hearing distance.
I know we shouldn't be surprised, but I hadn't imagined it would be this bad, or happen so quickly.
Asha watched the Duke as he walked.
I know, she said, and I think it's time we reached out for some aid.
The Duke grimaced and shook his head, though not with his usual air of certainty.
No. These are dangerous people, Ashalia, and they still think you owe them something. I'm not going to send you to beg for their help, not after everything you've been through.
But it's my choice to go, and it's something we need to do, observed Asha. The Shadrahin can organize the shadows, and we can provide them with weapons that may make the difference when the blind get here. I know you can't do this officially. That administration will never go for it. But let me try. If we don't try everything in our power to save the city, it's no different from your brother refusing to change the tenets.
Elosian said nothing for a few seconds, but eventually he slowed, then stopped altogether. He looked Asha in the eye, silent for a long moment. Then he gave a reluctant nod.
Let's discuss the details in my study, he said quietly.
Weir rose to leave, head still spinning from what Paraith had just told them. Almost 9,000 men, dead in some sort of ambush. It didn't take a military mind to understand that those losses were extraordinary, unthinkable.
Torin,
it was the king.
Stay, I would like to speak with you.
Weir gave a slight bow and sat again, waiting patiently for the others to file past. Once everyone was gone, Weir cast a cautious glance across his uncle. Caroline hadn't been wrong about his condition. He was drawn, sweating, and gray, a shadow of the man Weir remembered.
What can I do for you, uncle?
He asked eventually as the silence began to stretch. Kevran didn't reply for a moment, then leaned forward so that his face was close to Weir's.
I have only one question for you, Torin. Whose side are you on?
Weir resisted the urge to flinch back.
What do you mean?
The king grimaced.
Don't play the fool. I know where you've been these past few years, he said,
irritation thick in his tone.
I helped send you there, remember? You're one of them. Or you were. So my question is, are you gifted or are you a prince? Whose side are you on?
Weir shook his head.
I would like to think it is not a case of sides. The treaty would suggest otherwise, observed Kevran. or perhaps you have forgotten the meaning of that word. Treaties cannot be made without their first having been a war."
Weir bit his lip. His uncle spoke in a slightly breathless, manic way. Anyone else and Weir would have said he was insane. "I will always do what is best for Andara, uncle," he said after a moment. "But I don't see myself as being on one side or another."
"Then you have grown up to be a fool."
Kevran leaned back, looking disappointed.
"The gifted are traitors. Their power is a disease, a stain on the world. They are untrustworthy, each and every one of them."
Weir bit back an angry retort. The way the king was acting, he knew that to protest would only be putting himself on dangerous ground. "Is that all, Your Majesty?" he asked stiffly. The king inclined his head, making a dismissive gesture. Weir stood slowly and left, shaken. What had happened to his uncle? The man he remembered had had no love for the gifted, but nor had he hated them. If anything, it had always been Kevran that had the calm head and Alosian who had spouted the rhetoric. He was so caught up in his worries that he almost walked straight into Draslothlar, who had been waiting in the hallway outside. Weir excused himself, but when he tried to move around the other man, Dras stepped into his path again. Weir scowled as his already frayed temper threatened to snap, but held his tongue and looked at the Shen representative steadily. "Can I help you?" Dras smiled at him, a look so predatory that it made Weir shiver.
"I just thought I should introduce myself, Your Highness," he said in an obsequious tone. "I am Draslothlar, representative for Tol Shen."
"I know who you are, Representative Lothlar," said Weir, trying to sound irritated rather than anxious. Had Dras recognized him from Thrindar? Weir looked different now. Hair trimmed, a light beard, fine clothes rather than rags. And in Desriel, they had only spent a few minutes in each other's presence. "As you can imagine, I have some very important things to discuss with my father, so if you wouldn't mind..." Dras didn't move.
"How was Kalandra these past few years, Your Highness?" he asked, his gaze intent. "Whereabouts were you stationed?"
"Ildora," said Weir automatically. He'd had these details drilled into him over the past few days.
"Ah, I remember Ildora. Lovely place."
Dras sounded relaxed, but Weir could still see the focus behind his eyes. "I don't know about that. I saw plenty of good men die defending against the barbarians. It doesn't bring back fond memories." Dras's expression didn't change.
"I suppose you've been to the inn there, the Juggler?"
Weir hesitated. He'd been told plenty about Ildora, but he had no information on the names of the inns there. And it was the same inn that Caroline had sent them to in Thrindar. His heart sank.
"No,"
he replied.
"No,"
Dras looked surprised.
"Not once. I remember it being very popular when I was there."
He frowned.
"Perhaps I'm misremembering. Perhaps that inn was somewhere else."
Weir forced himself to keep his breathing steady. The man knew. "If you don't want anything, Representative, get out of my way," he growled. Dras smiled.
"I don't want anything for now, Your Highness."
He stepped to the side. Weir stalked away, not looking back, but unable to stop picturing the smarmy expression on the representative's face. The Shen gifted should have been thinking of ways to defend the city, not playing these games as if nothing were amiss. Doing his best to banish Lothlar from his mind, he headed for his father's study, arriving just as the door opened and Asha emerged into the hallway. They stared at each other in mild surprise for a second, and then Weir gave her a rueful smile.
"Interesting night," he observed.
Asha nodded her agreement.
"Remind me to stay away from your parties in the future," she said dryly.
She slipped something into her pocket. A key, Weir thought, then gave him an apologetic squeeze on the shoulder.
I'd stay to talk, but Michael needs my help. And then after that,
it's okay. Go. Weir hesitated. And Ash? If I don't see you again before the blind get here. Asha smiled at him.
Then I'll see you after, she said firmly.
Weir watched her go, even now still barely believing it was really her. Asha's survival of the attack at Kaladel was astonishing, miraculous, and her new place here at the palace, what his father had been building with the augurs these past few years, was even more so. He sighed, then walked inside to find Elosian flicking through some papers. The Duke glanced up as Weir entered.
I'm glad you're here, Torrin. We need to go back to the feast, he said, pushing himself to his feet.
Weir gave him a blank look. The feast? Surely everyone will have gone.
They won't know what's happening for another couple of hours.
Elosian ushered him out the door.
Which means we have exactly that amount of time to convince anyone capable of fighting that there's still a chance. That there's no need to panic.
Weir grimaced. We need to lie, you mean? Elosian sighed.
Yes, we need to lie, he agreed.
Weir just nodded, and they walked back towards the ballroom in heavy silence. Chapter 47. It was the very early hours of the morning, the moon still high, when Davian caught his first glimpse of the palace. He exhaled as he took in the grand structure, the knot of worry that had been sitting at the base of his skull loosening a little. After all that had happened, it was a relief, almost surreal, to finally be here. He rubbed his neck tiredly as he approached the gate, which was an ethereal silver in the moonlight. Aside from the guards, there was no one on the street. As with the rest of the city he'd seen, everything was impressive, and yet it felt empty, deserted. His footsteps crunched in the post-midnight hush, and all four men at the gate were watching him with narrowed eyes before he got within 50 feet.
"No entry to the palace," said one of them, stepping forward. His tone brooked no argument.
Davian held up his hands to show he meant no harm.
"I need to see Aelric or Dizia Shainweir," he said, his tone polite. "It's urgent."
The guard shook his head.
"Sorry, lad, but no visitors. And if the Shainweirs are even awake, they'll be helping prepare the city defenses. I can't disturb them."
"I have information about the invasion."
The guard raised an eyebrow, looking skeptical.
"Do you now? That's convenient. Perhaps you can tell me and I'll relay it to those who need to know."
"I need to give it to them directly."
Davian rubbed his forehead. This was not going well. "Could you please just tell them that Davian is here to see them?" The guard scowled.
"Fates, lad. What part of no entry don't you understand? Even if they knew you, I couldn't let you through at this time of night."
Davian sighed. He hadn't wanted to do this, but the man was clearly not going to be swayed. He concentrated, reaching out with Khan. He almost lost his grip on the connection, so surprised was he by how easy it was to slip inside the guard's mind. Once through, though, it wasn't like Malshash's thoughts, cold, ordered, and distinct. Everything here was a mess. Emotions tangled with sensations, tangled with memories, each coloring the other until none were entirely recognizable. Davian focused on the present, trying to block out everything else as Malshash had taught him. There was nervousness about what was coming, a sense of dread, and suspiciousness of Davian, certainly no inclination to let him through the gate. He looked deeper, trying to find what would change the man's mind. The guard knew who Aelric and Dizia were, though only from afar. They registered as two faces, little more. He turned his thoughts to Weir, to Prince Torrin. That was a different story. A powerful figure, an intimidating one in this man's life. One word from the prince and his life could be changed, for better or for worse. Davian barely stopped himself from shaking his head in disbelief at the thought. He withdrew the sliver of Khan, sighing. If you're comfortable with the consequences once Torin discovers his friend has been turned away. He trailed off, turning as if to leave.
Wait, what?
The guard's voice had taken on a nervous note. The prince? You never mentioned... I shouldn't have had to. Davian shook his head, doing his best to look irritated. I asked for the Shainwers because I knew Tor would be busy. But I'm an old friend of his. From Calandra, he added, remembering where Weir was supposed to have been for the past few years. He stepped forward, looking the man in the eye. Davian. And it's urgent. The guard hesitated, and Davian pressed home his point. Just tell him I'm here. If he doesn't know who I am or doesn't want to let me in, you can lock me up. He gave his most confident smile. But he'll want to see me. The man hesitated a moment longer, then nodded briefly and disappeared through the gate. A few minutes later, someone else appeared from within the grounds, a harried look on his face. He was older, finely dressed.
Davian?
Davian nodded.
My name is Laemon Cardai. Come with me, quickly, please.
He turned to one of the guards.
Trevin, you trust me?
Of course, Master Cardai, said the man.
Tell anyone who asks that he left,
Laemon said, jerking his head towards Davian.
Walked off, didn't say where he was going.
Trevin bit his lip, then nodded.
We can do that.
The other two men with him nodded their silent agreement. Davian frowned, but hurried after the older man, through the gates and magnificent grounds and into the main building. Once inside, Laemon took a couple of sharp turns, then ushered Davian into an unoccupied room. He shut the door and leaned against it, exhaling in what appeared to be relief.
"What's going on?" asked Davian in confusion.
"You've caused a bit of a commotion, I'm afraid," said Laemon, gesturing for Davian to have a seat.
"Not through any fault of your own. Prince Torin will be along to see you shortly, I'm sure."
"What happened?" Laemon sighed.
There was a feast earlier tonight, and several lords stayed around afterward to discuss the defense of the city. The prince was part of that meeting, along with his father, uncle, and a couple of administrators. We were just finishing up when word came that one of Torin's friends from Calandra was at the gate.
He shook his head, a weary motion.
We both know where Torin's actually been these last years, but until now few others did.
Davian hesitated, for a moment unsure how much he could admit to this stranger. Then he frowned, picking up on the last part of Laemon's statement.
Until now? King Andras lost control when he heard.
Laemon looked dazed at the memory.
I don't know how else to describe it. He stood up and in front of everybody, revealed where Torin has been. The fact he's gifted, claimed that this was Torin's way of letting his bleeder friends into the palace so that they could kill him.
Overthrow him. He shrugged.
The Duke did his best to calm him while I slipped away. I don't think anyone else saw us coming inside, so if Trevin keeps his word, which he will, you should be safe in here for a while.
Davian gave him a stunned nod.
Thank you. Don't mention it. I've heard Torin's entire story, and I know who you are. What you are. We can use all the help we can get against what's coming.
Laemon looked grim.
I should get back before I'm missed, though, or shut out altogether, he added, sounding bitter. Stay here. I'll make sure Torin knows where you are.
He slipped outside and shut the door behind him, leaving Davian alone and shaken. Perhaps 30 minutes passed before the door opened again. Davian rose in anticipation, his smile broad as he took in the first of the two figures in the doorway. Weir was almost unrecognizable with his fine clothing and neatly trimmed hair. Davian's attention shifted to the girl next to him. They locked eyes, and for several moments neither of them moved. She was a shadow. But Davian recognized her immediately, and yet it couldn't be. Then she was rushing into the room, and they were embracing.
Asha?
Davian could barely choke out the name, overcome with a flood of emotion. He held her away from him for a moment, peering into her black-scarred face, scarcely daring to believe it. He swallowed hard as unexpected tears threatened to form in his eyes. Even as a shadow, she was the most beautiful thing he'd ever seen.
How?
Asha grinned in delight at the look on his face.
It's a long story, Dav.
Weir gave a cough as he entered the room.
Good to see you too, Dav. Glad you're not dead and everything.
Davian laughed dazedly, elatedly, grabbing Weir and pulling him into the embrace.
Fates, Weir, you have no idea how good it is to see you again. After Dylanis...
He shook his head, smile finally slipping a little.
Layman said I've caused trouble for you. I'm sorry.
Not your fault.
Weir stared at the floor, his brow furrowed as he said the words.
My uncle is very sick. I'm sure it would have come out eventually.
He rubbed his face.
Word's already spreading, though, and I have no idea what the consequences are going to be. I can't stay around here for long.
Neither can I, Dav.
Asha looked torn as she said the words.
You have no idea how much I want to sit down with you, tell you everything that's been happening. But Weir caught me just as I was leaving. There are things I need to do before the blind get here. Important things. I've only got a few minutes.
She gave him a rueful smile. She never believed you were gone. A guilty expression spread across Weir's face.
I shouldn't have either. I never would have left you in Dylanis, but Tayrus lost his connection with your shackle and...
It's okay, Weir,
Davian reassured him.
There was nothing you could have done, believe me.
His gaze returned to Asha, head spinning.
So, if you're alive, is everyone else?
Asha's face twisted.
No,
she said gently.
Just me.
Davian nodded. There was the momentary pain of having that flicker of hope crushed so quickly, but the joy of seeing Asha again was stronger by far.
It's still a miracle, he said, unable to wipe the smile from his face.
Weir gripped him by the shoulder as if testing to see if he was truly there.
So what happened? Where have you been?
He hesitated.
Is Niamh with you?
No.
It was Davian's turn to grimace.
He died in Dylanis. As to the rest, it's difficult to explain quickly. If you really have to go...
Weir nodded, looking frustrated.
I really do.
Davian sighed. He understood the need, but this reunion with his friends was going to be all too brief.
Any ideas as to what I should be doing next, then?
This was as far ahead as I've thought, he admitted.
I have control of some of my augur powers now. There must be some way I can help.
Weir and Asha exchanged glances.
You can read people?
Asked Asha.
Yes, why?
Davian smiled slightly at the odd expression on his friends' faces.
Don't worry, I'm not going to read either of you.
Weir shook his head, remaining serious.
It's not that, Dav.
He hesitated.
It's Ilseth Tenvar.
Davian felt his expression twist in sudden anger at the name.
Where is he? Locked up in Tolathian, supplied Asha. But he's not talking.
Asha and I were discussing this a few days ago, continued Weir.
That box for Caden, the attacks to find me, we know it's all connected to this invasion. And if I read Tenvar, there's a chance we might find out something useful about the blind,
finished Davian, unable to keep the reluctance from his tone. He rubbed his forehead, a sick feeling in the pit of his stomach. He badly wanted Ilseth to answer for what he'd done, but suddenly the thought of facing him made Davian queasy.
Caden didn't get his memory back then, I take it?
The council refused to help him, said Weir. I don't know the details, but I think Tayrus is still trying to convince them.
Davian was silent for a moment as he processed the information.
And Tenvar's said nothing, so far as we've been told, said Asha, a little bitterly.
Weir grimaced, nodding.
Things have been strained between the palace and the toll, as you can probably imagine if you've heard anything about how my uncle's been acting. The council have all but cut off communications now. We asked to see Tenvar the other day, and they refused us entry.
as is their right under the treaty, unfortunately. Davian gave a thoughtful nod. So you can't get me in, he said. If I want to see Tenvar, I'll probably have to tell them that I'm an augur. He rolled back his sleeve, revealing the smooth skin where his mark had once been. They're going to take some convincing if I don't. Weir and Asha both stared in silence for a few seconds.
Fates, murmured Weir.
How?
Then he shook his head, looking frustrated. No time. You just have to tell us everything when all this is over. But you're right. You are going to have to tell them you're an augur. That's one of the reasons we haven't sent any of ours yet. Davian gave him a puzzled look. Our what?
Augurs.
Asha grinned at Davian's expression, which he felt turn from bemusement to outright disbelief as he stared at her.
A long story. Only one of them can actually read people, though, and he's too valuable at the palace at the moment. If we expose him to Athian, it would be too risky for him to come back and assume no one from here will find out.
Davian was silent for a long few moments as he digested what Asha had said.
Tenvar managed to lie to me. He knows how to shield himself. I'm not sure there's any use sending anyone to read him, to be honest, he said eventually, a little dazed. We know, Dav. The chances of getting anything useful are slim. We just thought it might be worth trying.
Asha laid a reassuring hand on his arm.
If you don't think it is, though, I'm sure there are other ways you can help.
To her side, Weir nodded his agreement. Davian thought for several more seconds, then shook his head.
No, he said quietly. I'll do it. If there's even a slight possibility we can get answers from him, then we should try.
Weir quickly related how to get to the toll, and then glanced at the door, clearly anxious to leave.
I hate to go so soon, Dav, but I need to get away from here before an administrator finds me. The ill-cursed fourth tenant is an awfully dangerous thing right now, he said, looking nervous. I'm going to head to Fedris Idri until my father sends word that everything is under control. It's unlikely administration will try anything while I'm surrounded by my uncle's soldiers. Find me there if you discover anything important. He embraced Davian. Fates, it's good to have you back. When this is all over, we'll celebrate your return from the dead. Properly.
I'd expect nothing less. Davian turned to Asha, and they both hesitated for a second. Then she wrapped him in a long, tight hug, her cheek against his.
Be careful, she said softly. We have some things to talk about when this is all over.
Davian gave her a gentle squeeze.
I know. You too, Asha.
Weir was standing impatiently by the door.
You can find your own way out?
Davian nodded.
As long as the guards at the gate won't stop me.
They won't, Weir promised. Give me 5 minutes to speak to them, then head out. With that, he left. Asha paused in the doorway, giving him one last brilliant smile over her shoulder before she followed suit. Davian sat, still trying to comprehend everything that had just taken place. Asha was alive. It didn't seem possible, was too good to be true. After all he'd endured over the past few months, this was a ray of hope, of happiness, he'd not dared to think was possible. Suddenly the door was opening again and Davian leapt up warily.
Davian?
A scarred face peered into the room.
Tayris!
Davian relaxed again, smiling. He gave a soft laugh of relief.
Is everyone I know at the palace today? How did you know I was here?
A friend mentioned it.
Tayris made a face.
Word tends to get around when the man we're depending on to defend us goes completely mad.
Ah, yes.
Davian crossed the room, embracing the older man.
It's good to see you again.
You too, lad. Fates, you too.
Tayris smiled, and Davian suddenly noticed a long pink scar across his cheek, overlaid on some of the others. It looked fresher, newly healed.
Where's Caden?
Davian's heart suddenly dropped.
Is he okay?
He's fine, Tayris rushed to assure him.
And his memories?
Tayris took a deep breath.
Nothing, so far. But given how close the blind are getting, I'm going to see if we can do something about that in a few hours.
He outlined his plan to break into Tol Athion using the travel stones. Davian gave a thoughtful nod once he was finished.
"I'm about to go there myself," he said. "If there's any way I can help keep them off your backs, I will."
"I appreciate that, lad," Taris smiled. "So, where have you been?"
Davian opened his mouth to reply, then hesitated. He didn't believe what Driskin had told him, and yet the man from Tol Shen hadn't lied.
"I'll explain in a moment, but first I need to know something. When was the first time you saw me?"
Taris blinked, surprised by the question.
"The day you were attacked, of course," he said, looking puzzled. "Why do you ask?"
Davian stiffened. It was faint, but it was there. Pain in his temples. Taris was lying and trying to mask it.
"I see."
He was silent for a moment, trying to contain his suddenly roiling emotions.
"Tell me, did you plan it? When I got this?"
He raised his head, pointing to his scar.
"Did you get those men to rough me up so that I would get scared? Be forced to find my powers? Was it all a plan that went horribly wrong? Is that why you saved me?"
Taris paled.
"Of course not," he said hurriedly. "Who has been telling you this? I'd never..."
He trailed off as he saw Davian's expression. Once again, that faint but insistent throbbing. Another lie. Davian couldn't take it anymore, couldn't stand to be in the same room as this man.
"I have to go, Taris," he said softly,
hurt and disbelief making his voice tight.
"Just don't follow me."
He walked out without another word, blocking out whatever Taris called after him, emotions churning. He hadn't found the allies he'd expected at the palace, but at least he had somewhere to go now, something to do. It was time to get some answers from Ilseth Tenvar. Chapter 48. Asha walked through the silent city streets as dawn broke, a smile plastered across her face despite the task that lay before her. Davian was alive. She'd known it, but it still hadn't truly felt real until she'd seen him, felt his arms around her. It had been hard to leave him again so soon, but she knew she couldn't afford to delay in trying to contact the Shadrahin. The blind were on the march, and could be at the city within a couple of days, maybe earlier. There would be time for a proper reunion once all of this was over. Her smile faded. There would be time, if they survived. The empty streets and hurriedly boarded up stores around her were a stark reminder of what was coming. Last night's news had traveled fast. Nearly everything was closed, silent, and the few civilians walking the streets looked nervous and spoke to each other only in hushed tones. Even to Asha, who had only been out in the city a few times, the scene was surreal. There was a heaviness, a deep sense of impending doom hanging over everything like a thundercloud. She headed towards the Silver Talon, one of the smaller taverns in the Middle District, and the only name she remembered from the note she'd burned a month or so ago. It was hardly a foolproof plan, but she didn't know her way to the sanctuary. This was the only place she could think of to contact the Shadrach.